This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia's foster care system is overwhelmed, and the opioid epidemic has played a major role.
Every judge that you talk to in the state of West Virginia will tell you that their dockets are completely filled with abuse neglect cases.
This morning, we take a closer look at the challenges people who work within the foster care system face every day. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:44. Governor Jim Justice and other state officials gathered yesterday afternoon to unveil a new initiative launching in West Virginia that combines free substance abuse treatment with free job training. Emily Allen has more.
In 2017, West Virginia had a rate of nearly 50 overdose deaths per 100,000 people, according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse. That's more than three times the national rate of about 15%. West Virginia also has one of the country's lowest workforce participation rates. The Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics reports it was hovering around 55% in August. A new statewide initiative is aiming to change these statistics. It's called Jobs and Hope, and it launched this week.
Statewide, we've done a better job of offering treatment resources and recovery home resources to individuals that need treatment. But the problem is when they're done with treatment, they have little to no options for career employment or training.
That's Deb Harris. She's the lead transition agent for the Jobs and Hope program, previously referred to as Jim's Dream, referring to Governor Justice.
And the stigma in the state is so high, I think that this program can help eliminate some of that stigma and get individuals in recovery help in successfully obtaining their goals.
Harris says the program has 12 transition agents now. Combined, these agents are poised to help participants in all 55 counties navigate resources that the state can offer them. Barriers for people in recovery can include a lack of transportation, child care needs, health concerns, driver's license, reinstatement, finishing GEDs, or seeking higher education. So far, Harris says the program has seen 380 referrals. About 250 people have already met with transition agents to develop short-term and long-term goals for them to achieve.
I think giving individuals the tools they need to overcome things is really empowering and has a lot to say about a person as an individual, how they can overcome these things. And it really makes all of the stuff that they've gone through an asset to them, more employable.
Harris says she hopes to see 12 to 14 more agents hired in January. According to the governor's office, the West Virginia legislature agreed this year to put nearly $30 million toward the first year of the Jobs and Hope program. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Allen.
To learn more about Jobs and Hope, visit our website, wvpublic.org. Dr. Stephen Payne currently serves as West Virginia's 31st state superintendent. When asked what he's most excited about in education spheres throughout the state, he says there are promising indications of improved student academic achievement and points to the state's impressive graduation rates. He also highlights the career and technical education programs throughout the state.
We are creating pathways for our students, and sometimes as early as elementary school, that kids can emerge prepared for some kind of an occupation. I think that the economy, not only in West Virginia, but our region and throughout our country, is dictating that a different level and type of preparation needs to occur in order to be successful in today's world.
Education reporter Glennis Board spoke with Superintendent Payne at length about these and other issues. Here's some of that conversation.
Let's start. I'd like to hear about test scores. We know all schools have to test in order to receive federal assistance, and that each year it seems like, you know, test scores indicate that the system, the education system in West Virginia, is maybe not as effective as other states. But, you know, I've spoken with one educator in particular who says that if you compare West Virginia to other rural poor states, so in other words, apples to apples, that we're actually doing pretty well despite the challenges that we face. So I'm just curious, how do you look at these test scores? You know, which scores are you looking at, and what do they tell you about our overall system?
At the end of my tenure as superintendent, the first go-around, I served on the NAGB board, which is the governing board, the National Assessment Governing Board for the NAEP assessment, which mm-hmm. captures a lot of attention when those scores come out. It is not intended to be a test where you do state rankings. That's not at all a valid use of the test, yet many groups do that. So if you do subscribe to state rankings on the NAEP test, in elementary school in grades 4, in reading and mathematics, we're approximately ranked 36th through 38th in the country. As one of our department staff likes to say, we're out punching our weight class, so to speak. Because when you consider the strongest determinant external to the school that affects student achievement, it's mother's education level, closely followed by the father's, closely followed by poverty. And when you look at those numbers, our adults are unfortunately the most poorly educated general population of any state in the country. They have we have fewer adults with associate or bachelor degrees than any state in the country. So if you follow the logic that goes along with that, you would assume that we'd be ranked 49th or 50th in student achievement, and we're not. So mm-hmm. it indicates that we're outperforming our mean per capita income level, our educational levels of adults, but it's still not good enough. And then the other interesting discussion is that the U.S. Department of Education does in fact require us to have a statewide, what we call summative attestment. It typically is the course or the assessment at the end of the year that we give to all students in grades 3 through 8, and then in West Virginia in grade 11. And that's the assessment that I indicated. We've seen some slight improvement. We have a long way to go. But we're really, really honing in and working hard on mathematics, and we expect to see some improvement over the next couple of years. It's a 5-year initiative, and we're excited to see what kind of progress we might realize there. Now, if we talk about authentic assessments, I'm not a real subscriber of standardized tests to judge the quality of a system at all. And I formerly worked with a national organization that consisted of major companies. They don't really subscribe to standardized test score results to dictate the kind and be predictive of the kinds of skills that they need in employees. They want kids that can critically think and problem solve. They want kids that are creative, that can communicate in oral and written form, and who, most importantly, and this is really interesting to me, who are collaborators, who know how to work with others and know how to work well and productively. In addition, they need some academic skill level to be attained. But 92% of our business say that skill level in mathematics only consists of a good solid understanding of what we would term and how we've organized math in Algebra 1. Now that's a real interesting discussion, because the minute that we start referring to reducing the level of mathematics attainment by course in West Virginia, critics come forward and say, you're not teaching trig anymore? You're not requiring kids to go through statistics? And statistics might be a very important course today in terms of data analysis and application of big data. But some of that content today appears to not be nearly as important to business and industry as it once was.
Trying to get a handle on teacher shortages. Last year, it was reported that there were some, 700 vacancies, although finding the actual numbers I've found is kind of tricky. So I'm just wondering, do you know where we are this year as far as teacher shortages, and how does the state cope with those?
I think a lot of the issue with teacher shortage is creating a common language. Those 700 vacancies aren't true. They aren't empty classrooms. They're vacancies where we don't have certified teachers in those classrooms. In most cases,
mm-hmm.
we're actually to the point in some places of looking for mature adults that will man those classrooms and then obtain certification once they get there. I am deeply appreciative of adults that man those classrooms that may not have been trained professionally to be math teachers. But the fact of the matter is they're teaching a content area that they have not had the opportunity in most cases to be fully trained in. So we have created some online courses for teachers not only in secondary schools. We have about approximately 60 teachers who have signed up for the courses, and they're basically crash courses in Algebra 1 and Geometry where they can obtain content as quickly and as responsibly as we can possibly provide it so that they can go back and offer higher quality instruction to our kids, you know, in terms of them grasping and understanding content differently and knowing how to teach that content differently.
That was State Superintendent of Schools Stephen Payne. We'll hear more from this conversation tomorrow when Superintendent Payne shares thoughts about absenteeism, charter schools, and mental health in schools. In many states, the opioid crisis is contributing to a surge in foster care cases. West Virginia has been hit hard, especially. The system is so overwhelmed, state lawmakers voted to privatize it earlier this year. And child advocates are suing the state for allegedly failing to protect kids from abuse and neglect. As part of a two-part series, Roxy Todd has this look at what West Virginia's foster care system looks like on the ground.
Circuit Court Judge Joanna Tabbitt sits at her desk, taking notes in a yellow legal pad as she reviews a stack of about a dozen cases.
Every judge that you talk to in the state of West Virginia will tell you that their dockets are completely filled with abuse neglect cases.
Almost 9 out of every 10 of these cases involve a parent who struggles with addiction. As a judge, Tabbitt decides which children stay in foster care and which ones are reunited with their birth families. She says the ultimate goal is to get the kids back with their parents. But that only happens in about half of all cases.
The time frames are just too tight.
Usually, parents are given about a year to prove they are able to kick their addiction.
And you're not going to be able to get everyone into recovery and to get everyone where they need to be because most people do relapse. That's just part of the addiction process.
There are about 7,000 kids in foster care today in West Virginia. That's up almost 70% in 6 years. Spending has gone up, too. The state estimates the state and federal government will spend more than $330 million this year on child welfare services. Foster care is part of that.
We recognize we have a child welfare crisis in this state.
Bill Crouch is with the State Department of Health and Human Resources.
We have had to take children and keep them in overnight in a hotel or motel somewhere close.
Children sometimes stay in a hotel with a social worker, or even inside a state office, on a cot or a blow-up mattress. The first thing social workers do when a child needs to be removed from their home is to try to find a relative, like a grandparent. But if no relative will take them, they turn to a foster care agency, like the Children's Home Society in Charleston. On a Friday afternoon, the phones are ringing off the hook.
Happy Friday. This is Charlotte.
Charlotte Barnett is a social worker. On this day, Barnett and her staff are often scrambling in a frenzy, trying to find someone who will take a child, even just for the weekend. Every spare inch of their building is filled with piles of donated baby clothes, car seats, and toys. Barnett trains and oversees about 30 foster families in Kanawha County. And when Child Protective Services calls looking for a family, she's the one who picks up the phone day and night.
I'm sure that those workers have been working all day to try to find a home. It's heartbreaking.
On this day, a call comes in that a home is needed immediately for 3 children, siblings.
Yeah, right now I have no idea because everybody I have right now is totally full, so.
Barnett and the other social workers call every foster family on their list.
We got a slight situation here at the Charleston office and I need a little help.
By late afternoon on a Friday, a home is finally found for all 3 kids for one night. Then, the next morning, social workers enlist a wider search across the state to find a home for the long term. This type of situation is common inside West Virginia's foster care system. These kids then have to deal with the emotional fallout that comes from the chaos. And the job of helping them work through that trauma often falls on the foster parents. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Roxy Todd in Charleston, West Virginia.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. Next week, we'll hear the second part of this story, which profiles several foster care parents in West Virginia. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.